What is up, salt community? Welcome back to episode 5 of the Monochrome Podcast. This podcast is for you. If you like faders, if you like LEDs, and if you love compressors and
lasers,
and especially lasers. Mm-hmm. And if you like to shoot pictures of lasers, but not getting the lasers in the sensor, because we learned that will destroy your camera. Oof. At Salt 2023, uh-huh. Then this podcast is for you. I am your host, JT, and we have Kaylee and Caitlin with us. How are you guys doing?
I mean, we're doing better than those camera sensors, that's for sure.
I wish I had lasers in my house. That'd be fun.
I am partial to lasers, that's for sure. And I could have a whole conversation about LEDs being the new set design of the world, but
100%.
I see, mm-hmm. I see.
But I'm doing good.
Yes, they were very cool, the lasers were, for sure. Mm. We know a guy if you want some lasers.
100%. Are we all just giant cats because we love lasers so much? Like, is this what's happening?
Never thought
just
of it that way.
Just chasing them around.
Yeah.
That's funny. All right. Well, we're going to get into our first segment, which is the Listening Now segment. And I'm leading that one. So I've discovered I like the idea of reading, but I'm always really bad at it. And I just don't have time to sit down and read a book. So I've rediscovered audiobooks, and I've gone back and started listening to The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. Mm-hmm. I read it a long time ago and just got back into it and just finished it this week with the audiobook. And to say that it applies well to no matter what stage of life you're in, but especially creatives, would be an understatement for sure. So it's a great book. He talks about kind of the four practices to help you eliminate hurry from your life, which are silence and solitude, Sabbath, which I know you love to talk about, Kaylee, simplicity, and then slowing. Mm. So they sound similar, but he's got really great distinctions for all of them.
I've heard so many good things about this book. Like this is one of those buzzword books, I feel like, that everyone's just kind of buzzing about or has buzzed about. And the moment we walked through in our rehearsal, like, oh, what are we talking about on our podcast? And we just went through our topics. Oh my word. Like, I immediately put this into my Audible cart because I was like, this is like the 100th time I've heard about this book. I have to listen to it.
Yeah.
In hearing those four points just now, simplicity, like, I've always tried to think, how can I make my life more simple to like get rid of the busyness, not only like just the calendar busyness, but the feeling of busyness. So yeah, I'm definitely gonna be listening to this book because that sounds like something I really want to learn.
This is one of my favorite books ever written. First of all, I'm a John Mark Comer stan, and he can do nothing wrong. Like, he slays my life and I love him. But this book, when I say changed my life, I'm not being dramatic. But I do love Sabbath. I think it's a conversation that more people need to have. Yeah. So JT, I love that you're listening to it. And I love that you started this segment saying, I don't have time to read books.
Yeah.
So I'm listening to the audio. And I'm like, well, this is why you need to read this book.
I was talking to a mentor the other day and he was like, how can I pray for you? And I was like, well, I've been reading through this book. And I said, what's ironic is while I'm listening through it, I am doing other things. Mm-hmm. So it's very convicting because he's like, you need to slow down. And I'm like, I don't have time to slow down. I got dishes to do. You know?
I got
to
listen to this book about slowing down by hurrying up.
Exactly. So it's a hard one. Like, it really, you're listening to it and you're like, oh, this is so good. Okay, I got to go do some stuff, you know? And and so it really is one of those, like, it's so good, but it is really just such a hard practice to implement. Hmm. And like the silence and solitude, the Sabbath, the simplicity, the slowing, like listening to them, you're like, that's the life I want. But then it's so easy to immediately start coming up with excuses and start coming up with things you have to do. And like, I have a 10-month-old baby. And so, you know, I think it's such an important practice that we have to implement. And he makes such a good point because he's like, I know what you're thinking right now. And you're like, no, you don't. And he's like, yeah, you're thinking I have this and I have this. But then he makes a point like God himself had to Sabbath. Mm. God himself had to rest. Mm. So who are you to think that you don't need it? you know, like how arrogant, he doesn't say that, but it really is like arrogant to think like, oh, I don't need rest. I'll be fine. I can just power through. It's like, no, if God himself had to rest, surely you do as well.
Ooh, that's such a profound thing to like just stop and think about. I feel like that's the challenge for today. Just stop and think about that God had to rest. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I would highly, highly recommend going and at least listening to it, if not sitting down and reading through it, taking some notes, and implementing some of those practices of silence and solitude, which is just getting away and having quiet time, Sabbath, which is a set aside like 24 hours of just relaxing, spending time with family, no screen time, no, you know, consuming podcasts or media or any of that stuff, no TV, simplicity, which is just making your life simpler, having less stuff, having less complexity, and then slowing things down and not being so rushed and buying into this hustle culture, which even exists in the church, which I'm sure many of us know. So we have three rules of church media teams that we want to tell you about. Number one, never, ever judge each other's coffee choices.
Number two, never, ever let friends use bad church media. So we would be pretty bad friends if we didn't tell you about your best option for finding really good church media, and that is SALT's presenting partner, Shift Worship. Shift Worship has the resources you need to create visually stunning worship experiences every week, from videos to motion graphics, stills, title slides, and even social graphics.
Wait, y'all forgot to mention the secret third rule. They never, ever pay for the first month of media. Seriously, you'll get your first 30 days of new media from Shift Worship completely free when you go to the link in our show notes. Thanks, Shift Worship. I love our friends at Shift Worship, just like I love church gear. So Luke had the opportunity to sit down with Toby, the fearless leader of church gear, who started this company because he just had a lot of gear to sell. So tune in as we hear their conversation.
All right, I am here with the one, the only, Toby Walters. How are you, my friend?
Great, but what if there were two of me and you didn't even know?
Well, if there were two of you, I want to meet the twin.
Yeah.
Maybe this is like multiplicity.
I mean, my wife says that the world can only handle one of me, so hopefully it's just one.
You're not a twin, right? Maybe we should
say that. Not that I'm aware of, but I mean, I don't remember when I was born. There could have been another one of me.
That's amazing. I don't know if you saw that movie, The Three Identical Twins, but anyway. Okay, so we actually connected paths long time ago. We were at the same church, Fellowship Bible. I don't think either of us are actually at Fellowship Bible anymore.
Nope.
Tell me about your role there. Kind of, I want to hear just kind of how did you get into what you're doing today?
Sure. And I was just a, you know, super volunteer. I like to describe myself at Fellowship. I was never on staff, but I was Worship and Production's biggest fan. It was awesome to sit with my wife in service and serve there, but not have to, you know, deal with the daily grind of being on a church staff, with a lot of our listeners understand. But I got my start back in San Diego originally. My dad was a music director. And so coming up under him, I started doing sound at age 13, fell in love with just audio production, and then got into music, and then decided I'd, you know, definitely was going to be the next David Crowder. And when God kind of chuckled at that, eventually I discovered.
That's because you couldn't grow a beard, right?
Exactly. And I'm too short. I had this unique skill of buying and selling gear. So as I was pursuing audio production, as I was pursuing music, I would just buy and sell gear on the side. And eventually God just sort of said, that's actually, you know, one of your best skill sets. And what do you think about using that for the church? And so it was kind of a random, let's give it a shot. And here we are. Church Gear is a real company now. And it's a fascinating reality to live in that.
I love that your dad was a true professional Christian who figured out how to get you involved at 13.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's when we all become professionals in the church, right?
And I was the best he had. He was like, I need somebody to do sound, son.
My own kid.
Yes.
I love that. Okay, so give just a quick synopsis of Church Gear.
Sure.
You kind of said this, you buy, sell gear. How many people work for you? How many churches have you guys been able to help over the last couple of years?
Yeah, so I mean, the original vision just stemmed from me being around church for my entire life, knowing that churches have just old unused gear and quality gear that just, it gets stuck in the closet, best of intentions, but church staff members don't have time, energy, resources to sell it all themselves. And so just the idea that we could come along and partner with churches to say, hey, we would love to buy all that equipment or as much as we possibly can, and then to resell it online. We resell it, and with the heart and the vision to try and outfit smaller churches, church plants, give them a trusted resource to buy quality used equipment that they know wasn't out on tour, it wasn't abused, it came from churches. So that was the heart and the intention. We launched the website in, I mean, it was me in my basement, March of 2020, right when COVID hit. And I launched the website, and in a little less than 4 years, here we are. I think there's about 35 people on payroll. We are working with churches all across the nation every single month. We have a truck in California right now picking up, I think, a dozen different church pickups. So it's been super fun to connect with, you know, everyone from Elevation to Saddleback and Willow Creek to, you know, just small rural churches that have a piece or two here and there, and we can serve. I mean, it's been literally thousands of churches that we've connected with at this point.
I love what you guys do. I'm not only a fan because you're basically taking this idea of like one church's trash, maybe another church's treasure, and helping kind of repurpose and move gear around as different churches may not need that piece of technology, or they're moving in and out of different phases and trends. We also have personally bought gear through you all, so I can also personally attest to the quality, how easy it is. And you may be sitting here thinking like, oh, wow, this sounds like Craigslist for the church. No, it's way better than Craigslist. and I think you guys are launching a new site soon. We'll talk about that towards the end. But here's what I love about you being on this podcast, Toby, is that you probably get a chance to see on the back end, sort of as you guys are sending trucks all over these churches, trends of varying churches.
Yeah.
You kind of get to see it on like, you know, in while it's happening. What are you seeing right now in the church when it comes to trends, whether it's gear, technology, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I get the wonderful pleasure of touring production systems and meeting teams all over the U.S. in churches of, you know, churches that are still running SD video in 4,000 seat auditoriums, like that actually happened, to churches that are on the cutting edge of doing, you know, crazy production things. I think one of the trends I see is that everyone, not everyone, but a lot of churches have realized what, you know, when production is too much, too many flashing lights, too many things moving around, like you've eclipsed the just the focus of worship and the intention of worship. And so I feel like a lot of these churches are realizing, okay, what is a beautiful lighting scene that we can do, and how do we get the mix so everything comes together into this experience, which is not distracting, and it's got to be at an incredible level, it's got to be intentional, it's got to be well thought through. And so I see like just simpler sets and less changes, less moving pieces. And I personally like that because it helps me focus during worship.
I love that too, because I think it helps reinstate this idea that as a church, we're not all about just quantity. And we've probably been on our spectrums over the years of like more, 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 more. But I think what you're seeing is this kind of return back to the heart of true art and saying, how do we create a moment that may last? I think sometimes the church is bad about gimmicks for gimmick's sake, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you probably saw the Prestonwood Church of the drummers, and people were like, hey, we probably should have warned people that was like a special thing, but that wasn't Sunday service.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a great example of like quality over quantity.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of the churches you get a chance to work with, which I love this idea that you probably have seen more church BTSs, behind the scenes tours of their studios and their setups and all that, than probably anybody, any single human maybe in the nation, which is maybe a title you should crown.
Yeah. Scariest human on earth.
Yeah. You also get a chance to get to know the people behind this.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just gear.
Yep.
So when you think about that, where do you feel like churches maybe hit the mark or miss the mark when it comes to investments? Investments in gear, which may be an easy thing to sell senior pastors and sort of leadership teams, versus investing in people. Where do you kind of fall on that line, and where do you see people kind of leaning?
Sure. And I'll try not to get too high on my soapbox, but, you know, especially with every church is live streaming now, and production is at an all-time high level. So pastors all across the U.S., all across the world are looking at other churches. And what they're seeing is they're seeing production. Everything they see, hear, feel, experience, that's all created through production. And so, you know, the level of expectation is just off the charts of pastors' visions. And pastors are visionaries. That's why they're pastors, because they can see this grand idea and they want to achieve it. And then, you know, you trickle down to the people that are actually making these things happen, the production people in their church. And there's usually a really large gap that there likely is not a key person in place that leads that team that has the trust of the senior leadership. And so one of the things I'm seeing at certain churches, like we'll take Saddleback, for example, Dennis Choi, just an incredible leader.
A great friend of the Salt community, yeah, too.
And so leadership has seen the absolute value of putting somebody in place over that team that they have the full trust of, and the team under them has the full trust of, that can say to the pastor, hey, I know you want to achieve this, but we only have, you know, two volunteers and three cameras, and the math just doesn't add up. And so having that leadership in place, that person's going to build a healthy culture and a, you know, a solid team, but also going to help leadership understand carrying out their vision is, you know, it's working with logistics and reality at all times.
So on a sort of practical, tactical level, what do you think, like, is the single greatest thing someone could, if there's a tech director listening to this, or a, you know, lead sort of creative team member listening to you say that, what is the single easiest thing they could do to sort of invest into their people today?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of just spending time together, having conversations. And this has been something I've had to learn every single day, just starting a company with church gear. Like, all of a sudden, I am leading people that I hadn't been doing much for a decade. So just the amount of time, the conversations, the honesty, the openness, and just trial and error. So to say to your team, okay, we're going to try this. It may not work. Please, you know, give me some advice, give me some feedback, and then let's refine it. Let's be on the same team, but let's also be, you know, clear about just the roles and duties to make sure that flows well.
I want to maybe throw a little bit of a curveball at you, because you made a great comparison there that, like, your team has grown. I mean, you said you're at like 35 now. Mm-hmm. You've been very active in the church. And as you can probably imagine, many tech directors listening, tech teams listening, they got into a leadership role because they were really good at doing, right?
Yeah.
They may have been a good engineer. And so they're like, great, you can lead people now, which may not necessarily be an easy connection.
Yeah.
What is maybe something that you can speak to when it comes to capacity of a team, right? In businesses, capacity is, well, we have enough revenue or we have enough cash flow to sort of hire another person.
Mm-hmm.
But churches don't necessarily have that. Oftentimes the tasks far outweigh their ability of their teams. How do you help manage capacity of teams when you don't really have the resources to sort of throw more people at it?
Yeah. One of the things that it was very hard to hear for me is asking my team, what things do I need to stop doing? And a lot of the answers was, you need to let go of trying to control every part of what we do in our jobs and trust us to do our jobs. And that was really hard to hear because, you know, growing up, you know, in your 20s and your 30s, you think you can do everything. You think you're the greatest worship leader ever. You're the greatest audio engineer ever. And so then to realize, well, I'm going to have to build people underneath me to do it, because that's the only way that things multiply. So getting out from behind the soundboard and putting somebody in there that might not be as qualified as you, is a very scary endeavor, but that's the only way that you're going to grow your team. And obviously you want to have a certain level of expectation. If you put a 13-year-old like my dad did, and the senior pastor says, why does it not sound good today? It's because I put a 13-year-old with no training. But if you bring a 13-year-old, stand beside you, help teach them and develop them, and by the time they're 16, if they might be a pretty dang good audio engineer, and you're able to step out of that and to lead more people and develop up more and more, like, you got to make those hard decisions.
Yeah. What is that? How do you convince leadership to say, hey, it's time to invest in people? I also think there could be a piece that if you want to go down this route, there's also an investment in gear that like, hey, this piece of technology or this tool, this gadget, as many technicians may go, yeah, I want this new mixer. I want this new console. I want this new piece of gear because it'll help shortcut all the time I spend here and there. But how do you convince leadership to say, hey, this investment of training, of capacity growth, of whatever is worth it?
I think it absolutely has to start with trust. Does your leadership trust you? Have you built that trust? Have you, are you combative, argumentative? Do you constantly say like no, or do you constantly say yes and then you don't deliver? So have you built that trustworthy relationship that then you can say to your leadership, I understand your vision and let me restate it to you so I know that I understand it. And then walk them through, okay, in order to achieve this vision, we need the right gear, we need the right people, and that's going to cost an investment. So, and you also have to have the trust of leadership that you're not just going to waste their money, that you're not just going to say, well, we need a D&B soundscape rig because I saw that at Prestonwood. They have one, and that's how they do it.
Right.
No, that you have... Like you've thought things through, you've talked to people, you've looked at different options, you've weighed different options, you come to them with two or three options to say, okay, in order to achieve this, we need at least this amount of gear, this would be a little bit better, and then we need these human beings. And we can pay them really cheap if you want, we can get them like college interns, but then if you're investing in gear, but you don't have quality people running the gear, you know, it's all a balance to make those things. And then all the facts and figures are actually out there online. If you want to know what like a video director makes at the local news station, I think you could probably find that information on Google. And so you can look and say, okay, we're paying our current video guy that's 19 years old. We're paying him $41,000 a year, but top-notch video producers at local stations are making, you know, $100,000 a year. I'm not saying we need to pay somebody $100,000 a year, but I just want you to be aware
and rejoicing all at the same time.
Leadership has to be aware what quality production people cost and how to actually like keep them part of your team long term.
I love that you talked about trust, because I do think one of the things that's most apparent to me as I get to know younger tech directors or younger leaders in the church is that they haven't spent the time to really invest in saying, hey, how does your pastor understand that you're actually for all the things they're for? And sometimes we speak different language, right? Leadership speaks in very much ministerial numbers of, you know, how many lives are saved or what is the attendance this week or how many are engaged in small group or how many are serving on a Sunday. But tech, we're engaged in, well, how many mistakes were had, or how few of times was feedback received, or how many miscues were fired. One of the things that a friend of mine who is a tech director in St. Louis said once, which I've always thought is so powerful, is as those in creative and tech ministry, we need to be really careful to say the word no. Mm-hmm. If a church leader or a pastor or an executive team member comes to you and says, hey, Toby, can you do this? Hey, Luke, can you take care of this? And you're like, I don't have capacity for that.
Yeah.
It's not actually great for us to say no. It's great to say yes, but can you help clarify, like, what is the priority this week? Because I've still got to get XYZ done, and you haven't given me your sermon outline, so I still have to get that stuff done too. Mm-hmm. Help me prioritize, which helps them understand the sort of perspective that you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But then maybe even on the flip side, what you were talking about of kind of having the right resources, it's maybe even just sort of advocating for resources in their context too, right? Not just saying, I need this because this is what Prestonwood does. Mm-hmm. Hey, do we want to be like Elevation and Jesus Culture and Saddleback and North Point and Passion and all these sort of quote unquote church brands? But hey, I want this because I think it will shortcut how long it takes to train our staff or our volunteer team, right? Or I want to have this console because what I'm seeing is we can create templates and workflows and file formats that allow people to kind of customize their thing faster and they won't have to spend as much time midweek, or our consistency will be better, right? Like help them understand it in their value points.
Yeah.
Not just in kind of what matters for you. Any thoughts on that?
I had just a very interesting conversation with, I'll shout out Aaron Miller at Mission Hills Church in Littleton, Colorado. And one of the things I've seen a lot recently is that churches will get the same infrastructure in their audio mixers all across a campus. So they'll have the same thing in front of house, you know, maybe a different size in broadcaster monitors. They'll have, so, you know, if it's Yamaha infrastructure, they'll have CL5 or CL3 in the youth room so that everybody knows that they can deploy, you know, volunteers anywhere. And so that's a very intentional decision. Aaron did the opposite. He intentionally put different infrastructures all across the campus so that they could train up young volunteers to be prepared for anything. So I thought, you know, both are wonderful approaches to go to their leadership and say, like, we want to intentionally do these approaches so that we can raise up leaders and deploy people where we need and achieve your vision. But, you know, you can go about it in very different ways. It's just have an intelligent, intentional plan to build trust with your pastor.
Oh, I love that. Cause yeah, being gear agnostic means you're going to understand the path and the workflow regardless of the exact piece of equipment and
yeah,
probably be a better well-rounded volunteer. I love that. All right. Let's talk a little bit about, kind of your world specifically today. So buying and selling of gear.
Yeah.
What is the benefit of buying and selling used production gear?
Sure. For, the churches specifically, I was in church ministry. I was a, you know, paid staff member, and I realized the absolute nightmare of the fact that gear just builds up and builds up and builds up, and you need new stuff, and the old stuff isn't what you need anymore. And so I get that you've got this storage space filled with gear, and it's weighing on your conscience. I fully recognize that. I empathize with you. And I encourage you, hey, if you have an intern on your team, if you have capacity yourself and you can take pictures and put everything up on eBay and sell it yourself, great. You're going to get the most return for your church, most investment. But if you're like most of the production leaders out there and you have 47 events this week and you have Easter coming and then you have camps this summer and then Christmas planning starts in August, that gear is going to sit there for the next 10 years with your best intentions, just passing it by over and over again. And so we want to be a resource to help you with that, make it as easy as possible, because Luke, like you said, like one church's trash, and we won't say trash because we know it's still quality gear, but like there are churches all over the US, like in your backyard, that have nothing or have next to nothing for their production gear. They don't even know what they need, but that gear would serve their ministry and their unique needs perfectly. And so just to create this resource now for smaller churches to not just go onto eBay or go onto Craigslist and be like, well, maybe that looks good. Hopefully it'll work. We're just trying to be that, you know, it's like the recycling idea, but with money involved, we pay you for the gear.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, you get money into your ministry that may offset the cost of new gear,
yep,
or other things. Have you ever heard anything really fun or out there of like what a church wants to use with the money they're going to get from y'all purchasing their equipment from them?
No. The funniest thing we realized early on is that so often the church is more excited that simply they get their space back. So
they want the closet empty.
They want the closet emptied. The executive pastor is walking by every week being like, when are you going to clean this thing out? Cause we need this for another ministry or whatever it is. And so we might hand them a check. The check is initiated from our bank, but like they get a check for tens of thousands of dollars and they're like, oh my gosh, thank you for clearing out this storage space. So that was really funny.
Yeah. We're happy to help. Yeah. And that's the best part too, is that you guys are able to give them money long before it sells, right? You don't hold the gear and then wait. Like I remember when we first met you guys through Salt, I was like, wait, you literally pay them, Toby, before you ever sell it? So you're taking all the risk, which makes it even better. You don't even have to ask the intern to put it on eBay and hold it and then hope that person's still here, you know, when they finally sell it.
Yep. And that was kind of one of the things I debated a little bit with when I started the concept of the company. I knew that with churches, it's all about the relationship, whether they trust you and they believe that, you know, you have a mission that they buy in with. And so as I was thinking, you know, well, consignment or maybe like delayed payments, and I thought it's just never going to work, that I only want to start this if I'm able to simply pay up front for the gear. And so it's been a huge, scary thing for us to say, like, we have to sell the gear as fast as we get it in order just to keep purchasing gear from other churches that need us.
love it. All right. Well, in the limited time that we have left, what's something that you love to talk about, Toby, that no one ever asks you? Ah. What is like some knowledge or insight or topic that you love that, yeah, no one ever is like, oh, Toby's probably an expert on that.
I mean, I could go with tacos. That's, I feel like I'm one of the Earth's great taco connoisseurs. But I realize everybody has different opinions on tacos. I used to be, you know, as I was trying to be the next David Crowder, I thought that I had all the insider information on the best opinions about music in the church. And, now I would just say that, like, you know, if you're not getting involved, if you're not, on board with the mission of your church, then you're just going to start complaining. And so I just want to encourage everybody out there, like, just find the place at your church or your ministry that you just love being a part of and dive in and like be a blessing to your church, be a blessing to your pastor. And if you're struggling in your role, if you're complaining a lot, maybe you're just in the wrong role. So nobody asked me that, but I'll share that little encouragement.
I love it. All right. Real quick, just because I'm curious and we're in the same town, where is your favorite Nashville taco?
The best tacos in Nashville is Mas Tacos Por Favor in East Nashville.
Okay. Cash only, or used to only be cash.
Now you can use a card. They use, they take cards now.
They are moving into the next generation.
I know. Look at them.
I love it. Toby, thanks so much. Couple of things. How can people connect with you and Church Gear best?
Yeah. So churchgear.com. And I'll just be the first one to say that we did not build the website robust enough 3.5 years ago, that we have outgrown our, and I'm not a web guy, so I'll say, you know, the code that is this churchgear.com. So we are completely rebuilding churchgear.com. It's launching somewhere right around March 1st, and it will work this time. And you can actually purchase gear easily. So that is the best way to find us, churchgear.com.
I think we twisted your arm because we're big people who are like, hey, if you're going to come over here and tell your story and say, go visit the brand new church gear, we're also like, can you please give our team something or our community something?
Yeah, it was Salt 99. So 99% off everything. Was that? Oh, wait. I'm getting a word from my brand director. No, it is Salt 10. So SALT10, Salt 10, and you get 10% off anything and everything. So you want to buy everything in inventory, it's 10% off the whole purchase.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And
we do have the church gear.
I can't wait to see how many people try Salt 99 just to try it, you know?
We also have the Church Gear podcast, and that's another way to find us on anywhere you get your podcasts. It's total buffoonery. It's much less professional and put together as the Salt podcast. But if you're looking.
But you guys have a lot of familiar faces. I can say this to our Salt listeners, those who have been a part of Salt Conference over the years, there's like going to be a lot of voices that you guys have a lot of fun with on the show that have taught and stuff like that. So great, great call out there as well.
But, yeah.
Toby, thank you, my friend. Thank you for some time. And I hope everybody goes and saves 99% on all their used gear.
And if it doesn't work, call Blake.
There you go.
Oh, we're so grateful for Toby and Church Gear and the knowledge that he has. I hope you production people in particular were able to take away a couple of nuggets from that. I do want to tell you guys that Church Gear is offering a 10% discount. So if you visit their site, use the code SALT10 for 10% off. Now, I want to transition us into this beautiful moment that we have on a couple of our podcasts. We call it the pastoral moment, where we just want to take a chance as the Salt team to feed into your guys' soul. And today, maybe challenge your hearts a little bit. Have any of you guys heard of the little children's book, The Little Red Hen?
No.
I know. It was read to me a lot growing up. JT Sorry, that is like absolutely so aggressive. Not.
That was so abrupt. That did not feel pastoral to my soul.
Welcome to youth group.
Well, besides JT. Well, to fill you in then, The Little Red Hen is a children's book about this hen who does chores all around the farm. She asks the other farm animals to help her, and they all say no, especially at the very end. She goes to bake a cake. She asks for help. They say no. And when she is done baking this delicious dessert, they all want to eat a piece of it. And she's like, no, I'm sorry, you didn't help. And it is really a cautionary tale to teach children that you reap what you sow. And I have grown up with this book and the story in my head. And then it was flipped on me one day at church when a pastor was like, aren't we so glad that God's grace does not work that way? And it just blew my mind because God's grace is the opposite. When he bakes that dessert, and even though we refuse to help, when we come to him with repentant hearts, with a humble heart, when we realize what we've done and we still come to him saying, can I please have a piece of that something? God doesn't say, no, you didn't help. No, God's grace is the opposite. And he says, here you go.
I love that.
Like, you can still be a part of this.
I feel like that ties so well, too, into what we talked about with the Listening Now segment, because it's so easy to feel like we need to work and we need to do all these things in order to reap the reward and the benefit. And, you know, on earth, there is an element of you reap what you sow. And so if you sow bad seeds, if you sow laziness, you will reap bad seeds and laziness. But if you sow trust in God, then you will reap the benefits of salvation and of eternal life and grace and peace and all of those things. And so it's easy, though, to think like, oh, I need to work, I need to hustle, I need to do all these things. And yeah, I'm saved by grace. And yeah, I get peace from God and God alone, but also I need to do these things and get distracted with that.
And I will say it's a fine line to walk, because you have to be careful of how much is you handing out grace to your team sometimes when they're not pulling their weight or doing their job that they need to be doing. And how much are we showing God's grace in the ways that is truly God's grace when it needs handed to those individuals or handed to ourselves too?
Oh, I love that. One thing I know I've been working on personally is, as a human, this is the only side of heaven where I get to give grace freely. In heaven, we're not going to have that opportunity. And so when it comes to my team, my husband, my friends, this is the moment where I get to offer them a cake, a pie, a bread, whatever, and say, yeah, maybe you didn't help, but like, let's share this together. Mm-hmm. And even that is such a beautiful picture of the Lord and how Jesus freely gives his grace. Oh,
that's gorgeous. I know. I just heard someone recently say, this is the only time we'll be able to worship God while in pain, you know, here on earth. In heaven, there is no pain. There's no sadness. This is our only time to say, Lord, I will worship you despite this. And I love that, because it's just such a parallel to what you said.
And awesome. It's an opportunity, which is like a weird way to think about it, but it is. Yeah.
I love it. This is so great, because we're going to move into our next segment, which is our creative challenge. Oh, I love that we've been talking about grace, because a creative challenge I have for you guys is what I like to call spend an hour in their shoes, which sounds a little weird because as creatives and typically in churches, you're wearing multiple hats. But me as a photographer, I cannot graphic design. And my friend who's a videographer cannot do graphics either. So what I want you to do for your creative challenge is I want you to swap roles for an hour. So photographers, hop on the computer, try to make a graphic, remake what they made for Sunday. Photographers, hop in behind the mic and try to lead a worship song. Maybe it's just for your team, but what this is doing is it's actually stretching you and helping you create something new. You know, like in the Bible, it says stretch out your tent posts, and that's what we're doing here. Not only that, doing something new helps prevent Alzheimer's, which I don't ever want. So that's my challenge. Go and spend an hour in someone else's shoes on your team and then post it on your socials. So if you're a photographer or videographer and you led worship, I want to see it. I want to see your song. I want to see your B-roll. I want to see it all. Hashtag Salt Creative Challenge. And I cannot wait to see it.
That is such a great challenge, Kaylee. I love it. That's going to be so fun. I am very excited to, instead of make social graphics, go edit a podcast and do something a little different. So this has been episode 5 of the Monochrome Podcast. It's been such a blast. Make sure to post your creative challenges. Go check out our friends at Shift Worship. Links in the show notes. And then also 10% off of church gear, which is super exciting. So we will see you again next week.